Wilcox versus Lyons. Mr. Strelka, whenever you get ready. Please.
May it please the court, Tommy Strelka here on behalf of the appellant Colette Marie Wilcox. I thank the court on behalf of Ms. Wilcox for inviting oral argument this day, and I appreciate your time. This is a matter in which we seek reversal of the decision of the district court to grant the motion pursuant to 12b-6 of the federal rules to dismiss the matter at an early stage in the matter. There were multiple counts within the filed complaint. The sole focus of today's appeal is the count of retaliation. And there are two questions that, from my perspective, this court has to answer in the affirmative to see a reversal happen in this matter. The first question, and they can be looked at in different steps, but the first question would be whether or not the facts as alleged in either the complaint or the amended complaint, I'll say that the facts that as they pertain to retaliation are unchanged between the amended complaint and the filed complaint. But whether those facts sufficiently, following a Title VII framework, produce a cognizable claim of retaliation under Title VII, because under Section 1983, when discrimination matters are reviewed, the proper framework to apply is the Title VII framework. So even though Title VII doesn't apply because of the number of employees within this office, the elements of what one would require for a prima facie case of a Title VII retaliation are essentially the elements of a prima facie case of retaliation under 1983. Now, the second question involves whether or not retaliation is a cognizable claim under Section 1983, and either one of these can be looked at first. But for purposes of today, I'll start with Title VII, if that's all right, unless anyone wants to interrupt me. For purposes of Title VII retaliation, obviously we need to have protected activity, we need to have adverse employment action, and there needs to be a causation between the adverse employment action and the protected activity. Now, on November 30th, 2015, Colette Marie Wilcox, Deputy Commonwealth Attorney in Carroll County, is in a conversation with several of her coworkers, including one of her supervisors, not the Commonwealth Attorney, but one of her supervisors. And it's during this conversation, the conversation involves something to do with one of the co-workers' relatives, a female who's experiencing some form of harassment or unwanted attention. And it's alleged in the complaint and the amended complaint that one of the other assistant Commonwealth attorneys, that being Philip Steele, with closed fists strikes Miss Wilcox in her rear shoulder, and that it was of such significant force to cause bruising and pain. And then, within this meeting, Ms. Wilcox states within the meeting, do not use me as a demonstrative evidence of violence against women. There is hostility in the room against women. And it's alleged that when she said this, that Mr. Lyons had entered the room at the time. This occurred November 30th. On that day, she did transmit an email, as alleged in the complaint, complaining of this in light of a sexual discrimination. And then on December 1st, 2015, she again has another protected activity in which she meets with Mr. Lyons, the Commonwealth Attorney, Virginia Constitutional Officer, and she states that within the Carroll County Commonwealth Attorney's Office that it's sexual discrimination is, excuse me, it's tolerated or promoted, that being sexual discrimination against women.
Be messing up your order.
No, it's fine.
I'm sorry about that. The facts as pled and as you've begun to articulate, I think, you know, suggests some conduct that may be wrongful at best. And so I'm not, this question isn't intended to, you know, to endorse any of the things about the nature of the conduct. But it seems to me our fundamental legal question is whether the 14th Amendment Equal Protection Clause that allows a retaliation claim under 1983.
Sure.
And we have, I think, four circuits that have said no. other than ours. We have the Second Circuit that has gone after saying no, saying yes. And we have the Fourth Circuit that may not have squarely addressed it, but in Holder and City and in the Edwards case, you know, give a strong indication that the answer is no. And so, I mean, you may have a First Amendment case, you may have an assault case, you may have a bunch of other cases, but yeah, how do you get the legal basis for the claim that's up here on appeal?
Sure,
right,
Your Honor.
Now?
Well, that's a great question, Your Honor. The U.S. Supreme Court has repeatedly held that retaliation is nothing but a more particularized form of discrimination. Metaphorically, it's discrimination is the dog and retaliation is that breed of dog, a very particularized form. It is nothing but a well-defined and specified instance of discrimination. The Supreme Court has gone on to read into statutes retaliation claims, the ability to raise retaliation claims that aren't even provided for in the statutes. That's within the Age Discrimination and Employment Act, the National Labor Relations Act, and Title IX. The Second Circuit, in the Vega case, indicated that retaliation is simply another form of discrimination, and that's what it is. That is literally all it is. The Fourth Circuit, let me bring up some notes here. The U.S. Supreme Court in Jackson versus Birmingham Board of Education in 2005 said retaliation due to complaints of sexual discrimination is another form of intentional discrimination. let me find the Fourth Circuit case. Let's see. The Fourth Circuit in Alima versus the Chugut Support Services 2007 case said that retaliation claims are subsumed within the anti-discrimination of Section 1981. It follows then that this theory, this policy, that retaliation is nothing more but a form of discrimination, a particularized form of discrimination, and we know that sexual discrimination is prohibited.
I'm sorry, but isn't that, I mean, put aside the 3rd, 6th, 10th, and 11th circuits, isn't that broader reading of that inconsistent with our Edwards and Holder case?
I'd argue no, Your Honor. I'd argue no. I mean, that's the point of this case. I mean, is that the retaliation in this case you have is purely encompassed within the anti-discriminatory policy and the language within the 1942-1983 and the Equal Protection Clause.
Let me ask you one other thing, and I'll try to be quiet. You mentioned the Title VII, the number of employees.
Yes, Your Honor.
Is that the only basis that, you know, was the reason there's no Title VII?
Correct, Your Honor. That's it. If there were sufficient employees within the office, then...
Is it the office that matters or the county as a whole?
It's independent. It's when...
What's
when
the basis of you saying that?
Well, when you... I've had this issue come up in other matters, Your Honor. It's when you pursue a matter against a constitutional officer, it is literally against that officer's office. And he's a Virginia constitutional officer as a Commonwealth attorney, an elected official. He has a lot of discretion. He can operate without the say-so of the county. And so, you know, I think in the original complaint, the county was added. And that's for purposes of trying to see if perhaps a joint employer situation might arise or has arisen, but the facts don't. From what I understand, from what's in the record, it doesn't follow that. But when it's a constitutional officer's office, sheriff, prosecutor, Commonwealth attorney, it is the number of employees within that office that is the threshold. That's where you count. And so here there were less than 15, and so her only avenue, because it's not a First Amendment retaliation case, her only avenue is to use 1983, 42-1983, in vain of a retaliation claim.
What's on appeal here? Did the district court address that question?
The district court didn't know what the Fourth Circuit would do.
No. Did the district court rule on whether the 14th Amendment provides a retaliation claim?
No, Your Honor. The
district court basically ruled on the causation issue, 2.5 months delay.
Right, and that's why I began with
and
that.
And that's basically the appeal, isn't it?
Well, it's a two-pronged thing, Your Honor. So may I shift into the more of the Title VII framework to talk about that causation? Is that
well? I'm trying to find out what's before us. There's just all kinds of counts. There's an amended complaint. There's a bunch of rulings, and there's an appeal.
Right.
And it the inherent question is whether you have a retaliation claim, and
yes.
That's been raised. But I don't know if that was decided by the district court.
It was not.
And the operative ruling was the 2.5 month time period. I thought that if we were to conclude that you've alleged a cause of action with respect to the causation, we would have to let the district court in the first instance decide whether there's a cause of action still under 14th Amendment.
I see your point, Your Honor.
But I don't know, are we supposed to be taking that up for the first time on appeal? I mean, it's a little bit of a dicey question.
Right. And I understand your position, Your Honor. The trial court emphasized in the opinion, they didn't answer that question about whether the Equal Protection Clause grants us Ms. Wilcox's retaliation claim. The judge instead focused on whether or not there was a cognizable Title VII retaliation claim due to causation. And what the court fixated on was the temporal proximity alone not being enough. But that's not, and while I certainly did
that argue. That was the operative ruling, wasn't it? That's what threw the case out.
That's what threw the case out. That's correct. If you want to parse it down.
Why are we getting into all this other stuff? I mean, if you win on that, then the case has to go back. On that one count, and somebody's going to have to address whether there's a cause of action at all. There was even the preliminary causation question, and the court could duck all that. Because if there was no causation, that ends the case.
Well, I would argue, Your Honor, respectfully, that this is a de novo review, and you're looking at the amended complaint. The amended complaint says that there's a count of retaliation that's cognizable under 42 U.S.C. 1983. And regardless of how the trial court may have ruled under de novo review.
Why would you take up an issue the district court never addressed?
That's a good question for an appellate judge, Your Honor. But
we can
affirm on any grounds supported by the record, right? And this was argued below, and we could affirm if we believed there was not an equal protection claim here, but that if there were, you would have pled it adequately.
Right. So as I indicated at the beginning, for the plaintiffs to succeed, the appellant to succeed, there are two questions that have to be answered in the affirmative. Does she have cognizable Title VII retaliation claim under the Title VII framework? And if so, does she have a retaliation claim under the Equal Protection Clause, actionable under 42 U.S.C. 1983? And if the court is of the mindset that the only thing that is teed up for today is whether or not she satisfied the Title VII framework. Well, let's talk about it.
We can talk about anything that you want to raise. I think what I'm understanding, and I think Judge Rushing makes the point that we could go one of two ways. One is we could address the 14th Amendment issue. And if you were to lose on that, that ends it. You don't have to address the complaint, because there's no complaint. Or we could address the complaint and send back the case and let the district court address the 14th Amendment issue in the first instance. Or we could address both, I suppose, up here, whether it's causation and the 14th Amendment issue. But I think that's what's before us. Basically, is the operative ruling was the pleading the causation and
right.
And
I agree with you, Judge.
I think the point's well taken that we could also, if it's advanced below, we could, I suppose, address.
Yes, that's correct, Your Honor. Briefly, as my time dwindles down, I just wanted to emphasize, as it relates to the causation. The district court seemed to focus upon an argument that temporal proximity alone didn't carry the weight of the case. However, what was argued, and it's within the transcript of the hearing, is it wasn't just temporal proximity alone. It's temporal proximity coupled with the reason cited by the Commonwealth attorney for the termination.
Disproportionality is your argument.
Yes, it doesn't, you know, you can be terminated for any reason or no reason in Virginia, but there was a specified reason. It was insubordination. And she had no time under the facts as pled, violated a directive, refused an order, violated a policy. She was being held to task for some sort of attendance issues, but the only issue that turned this into, at least from the perspective of the Commonwealth attorney, an insubordination issue was that she had asked to review the letter that was being handed to her, and she asked to look at the policy. These are lawyers that we're talking about. These are people who like to know what are the guiding principles. As alleged in the complaint, in the amended complaint, none of this information had ever been provided to her about this attendance policy, and she merely had a question about it, and she asked in a very professional way. And her protected activities, November 30th, December 1st, the fact that 2.5 months later she's terminated for a cited reason that cannot ever be supported.
So your argument is basically it's time plus another component.
Yes, Your Honor, and the courts have held, I mean, there are additional factors beyond temporal proximity.
But I see you can cover that on your...
Yes. Thank you, Your Honors. I appreciate your time.
Mr. Kohlingstout.
Good morning, or it's good afternoon. Hello.
One thing that I think is worth, I want to make sure that we know, that there is a memorandum, that there is an opinion of the judge, and that is document 32, and it appears from page 125 through 133. So the judge, in fact, he has made two opinions, and this is the last of the two. Second of the two, in which he responds and talks about the situation, and he goes that he goes that twice.
My concern is, first of all, the gentleman, the person that I represent, is a Commonwealth attorney, and as the Commonwealth attorney, the person, of course, who is also in this and is doing, her name is here, and the decision is she's also a lawyer, but the most important thing for the Commonwealth attorney, who is Nathan Lyons, is the documents. There's two things that were going on, or that have been talked about. Number one, for Nathan Lyons, the Commonwealth attorney, what he is dealing with is the is what that was said or not said, was not done properly with the lady, explaining to her certain things that needed to be done when it had to do with job description and her job and how she should do with it. Then there's the other thing about, not Christmas time, but it was at the end of November, and the situation of where the lady did get hurt, and that was done by the assistant Commonwealth attorney, and his name...
What's your point? What point are you making?
My point is that what is going on, what went on within the, if I can just my little brain if my age, but it's at the end of November, what was going on was something in a place where Commonwealth attorney Nathan was not there. And what was happening is when they were talking about Thanksgiving, what was going on with Thanksgiving, who about Thanksgiving, had nothing to do whatsoever.
Well, it's alleged that he came upon the scene and there was a complaint submitted to him and an email, and then there was a meeting, the allegation is, and the district court accepted all that, and the district court said basically the termination for 2.5 months later was too attenuated to establish causation. That's what the court relied on. The court did not address the point that the allegation is that the termination was disproportionate to the alleged conduct. And the alleged conduct is that she asked for some information, a copy of a thing before she signed anything, and she wanted a copy of a policy. And he walked away and terminated for insubordination. So the attorney says, the plaintiff says, that plus fills in the gap for the 21 months because there's no other explanation until you go back to her complaint back in November. And so my question is, why isn't that sufficiently as pled? It may not survive factually, and it may not survive from the fact finder, but we take the pleadings as made and assume that they're true. Why doesn't that allege causation? It may be thin, but...
I don't think there's this causation because I want to make sure that there is a big difference. There is a... Between what was going on in the one day and then what was going on with the Commonwealth attorney. He was not there when the event happened. And that's one thing that we're...
Well, he came onto the scene, but...
Not at the time that it was happening. He did not see
that's
it.
That's irrelevant. The question is, she made a complaint to him.
That is true.
And then she was fired for insubordination.
Not because of that, though.
That's what he alleges. So, I mean, and that's, I think, the point. It sounds like you're arguing that maybe, you know, didn't terminate for insubordination, and we don't have the factual record on which to resolve that. Mm-hmm. What we're trying to get at is, first, as a matter of pleading, is it enough under the Title VII to plead temporal proximity plus the disproportionality? Do you have a position as to whether that adequately pleads causation under a Title VII retaliation case?
Let's see if I can correctly. What I'm saying is that there are two separate things going on there. In other words, it's not for the Commonwealth attorney. But what he did had nothing to do with the allegation of what he'd done
No, of course not. But what they alleged was the reason given was a pretext. That's what they alleged. They said she was not insubordinate. She was terminated because she complained. That's what they alleged in the complaint.
All right.
So how do we address that?
You address that by looking at the... The Commonwealth attorney had given to the deputy, I have several of them right here, but I'll try to go fast with it. There's a document called, and it's at document 5-2, and it would be, it is the document 62. And there is a deputy Commonwealth juvenile attorney job description. In other words, Attorney Lyons, what he was doing with the lady was to ask her to review this. She'd already signed for it, and so what he was saying was, and I'll get that to us, for example, general definition of work. Now, he has this, and there's a series of items that have been signed on May 7, 2014, was signed by Ms. Wilcox, as well as Lyons. So this was, it's called the general definition of work, the qualification of retirements, so the essentials functions, the knowledge. This was signed to in May, January, February, March, April, May 5, 7 of 14. In addition to that, there is an employment terms and conditions. There's a document which is number 64. It is the employment terms and conditions. Of that, it says that Colette Wilcox accepts, and she also signed this, on 5-5 of 14, she signs this, as well as does Nathan Lyons. Wilcox accept employment with the Carroll County Commonwealth?
Well, you seem to be arguing the against the facts that are alleged in the complaint. But the complaint alleges at 33 that Ms. Wilcox sent an email to Mr. Lyons detailing Mr. Steele's battery and derogatory and discriminatory comments against women. And she goes on to allege that in some detail. And then she says the allegations by Mr. Lyons that Ms. Wilcox was guilty of insubordination was pretextual, and that the real reason was because she made a complaint.
Okay, so what?
Now, the question is, the district court said that doesn't state a cause of action because those two actions were 2.5 months apart. And the plaintiff comes in and says, well, they were 2.5 months apart, but you don't consider time alone. You consider whether the disproportionality of the dismissal, that is, dismissal for insubordination, indicated it was pretextual, and if it's pretextual, it was related to the complaint. That's the allegations of the complaint. Now, without getting into whether that's who struck John and whether that's true or not, does that allege a cause of action?
Oh, wait, again, the last part.
Does that allege a cause of action for retaliation?
If you ask me again, please, so that I get sure I get it.
My question is whether the complaint...
Their complaint
alleges, whether it's true or not, alleges causation between her complaint in the fall of discrimination based on gender and her termination in, when was it, February, January, for insubordination, which they allege was a pretext, and that the real reason for the termination was because she complained in the fall. Now, is that a state of cause of action for retaliation?
The way I can put it is that my understanding is that the only thing that the Commonwealth attorney, that this is what he knew from the beginning, and this is why he made, and as you can see it, what he does is to say, I want you to do this. I'm not firing you or anything of that nature, but I need you to agree that this isn't going to happen again. And the big thing about it is that...
You're not accepting the thing. Mr. Lyons then suddenly turned his back after Wilcox asked to read the document and have a copy of the policy. This is the quote now from the complaint. Mr. Lyons then suddenly turned his back, raised his voice, and stated that Ms. Wilcox was terminated for insubordination.
That is correct, for insubordination. And the insubordination...
And the allegation here is the insubordination was because she asked if she could read the letter that Mr. Lyons had just placed in front of her, and she wanted also a copy of the policy.
Okay, that is just not the case. So what she did... not attached with the beginning part of it, with the...
You know, on 12b-6, we take what they allege exactly as true, right? We assume it's true at this stage of the pleadings.
I'm saying it is true.
What they allege. You saying what they allege is true?
No, not what they allege. If they're alleging that, if they are alleging that that was part of it, the answer is no.
Let's assume what they say is true.
Okay.
It's a state of cause of action.
State that again.
If what they said is true, is in fact true, do they state a cause of action for retaliation?
I hate to be so dummy, but if you could just explain that just a little bit more for me, please, so that I know how to answer the question.
Well, I'm not quite sure. I'm trying to say.
Okay.
We look at the face of the complaint, and they purport to allege retaliation, that she was fired because she made a complaint.
Yes.
She sent an email to Lyons complaining about discrimination against women.
Yes.
And then she was fired for insubordination. And they say she was not fired for insubordination. She was fired for pretext. Because she made the complaint. That Lyons was upset with her for making the complaint and fired her for that. That's what they allege. Now, the only question we have to decide is, does that state a cause of action for retaliation?
For redoubting. If you're just that last thing, I'm sorry, but my little brain.
All right, why don't you go on with your argument?
No, what I'm saying is that I don't want to say a yes and say that it's something that I don't understand. What I'm saying is it's very clear, and the judge indicated responding to that. Judge Urbanski, that in other words, what the deputy did had nothing to do with her getting hurt by the decision there. Philip Steele, the attorney Steele. So what I'm saying is that I'll just say it the way that I know. The way is that there were two separate things that happened, and there being the question, it is certainly that Nathan Lyons, Commonwealth attorney, Nathan Lyons, he was making it clear that what he did had nothing to do with what the allegations as of Philip Steele.
Well, I was asking about Lyons, not Steele.
Well, there's nothing that Lyons himself did nothing but follow.
He fired her, didn't he?
He did that.
Okay,
and he gives you reasons for doing that.
And he fired her, and he has his own reasons. He has his version of the story.
That is correct.
Her version of the story is he fired her because she complained to him about gender discrimination in the workplace.
That's correct.
Well, isn't that a cause of action for retaliation?
A call for action for
retaliation. Cause of action, complaint.
You mean for them?
Yeah.
Well, I suppose if that's what they're alleging, then that is exactly what they're alleging.
All right. Anything else?
No.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Strelka?
As always, I believe Your Honors have a very firm grasp of what is before the court today. I did just want to highlight just a few things. I had a little bit left of time. In that, not only was the cited reason for termination disproportionate, as Your Honor mentioned earlier, the possibility.
Well, I don't know if it's disproportionate. The allegation is a pretext,
right.
And the inference is that there's no reason for firing for insubordination, and therefore it's a pretext for
right.
discrimination. Now, whether that, as you know, whether that's true or not,
right.
there were a lot of other incidents that occurred
sure.
between the two, and that's something that has to be determined. But the district court seemed to cabin your complaint to just the time, 2.5 months, without taking into account the subsequent allegations.
I would 100%
agree. It looks like you have a pretty good argument there, but we're not deciding the case here or now.
Right. I understand, Your Honor. I also just wanted to point out that another weight to add to that side of the scale is the fact that Philip Steele, the individual who's alleged to have assaulted Ms. Wilcox, and witnessed by two other employees within the office, was never reprimanded or disciplined in any way, shape, or form by Mr. Lyons. And that to hold such a position when a coworker assaults another coworker.
Was that alleged as part of your complaint?
Yes,
under
Your Honor.
Retaliation?
It's in there. Yeah. Yes, Your Honor. It's in there. And I just wanted to highlight that other issue. And if the court has any other questions, I'd be happy to answer them. I just thank you for your time today.
Thank you. We'll adjourn court till tomorrow morning and come down to Greek Council.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor.
This honorable court stands adjourned until tomorrow morning. God save the United States and this honorable court.